We're now beginning Parshas Vayikra. This parsha contains the laws of different karbanos. As he does in most parshios, the Tzener Rena, quoting Rabbeinu Bachai, begins the parsha with some Musar, quoting Mishlei, where it says, "Ekev anava yiras Hashem, osher v'kavod v'chayim." Because of humility comes fear of Hashem, wealth, honor, and life. Those are four pretty remarkable results. If a person is humble, he's going to be God-fearing, wealthy, respected, and live a long life. What's the connection? Shlomo HaMelech is teaching us in this pasuk that we should be aware that there is one midah that is better than all the other midos, one character trait that supersedes all other character traits, and that is anava, the midah of humility, which means not to be an arrogant person. Moshe was clearly a remarkable person. He was the person who could talk to Hashem face to face, and he gave us the Torah. The Torah describes Moshe Rabbeinu in Sefer Bamidbar with one midah. He is called anav mikol adam, more humble than any other person. The Torah describes him as an anav because the midah of anava is the most desired midah of all. Moshe Rabbeinu was humble, and as a result, we find in this week's parsha, Parshas Vayikra, that Moshe was uncomfortable entering into the Mishkan to talk to Hashem. The Mishkan was noticeably different than anywhere else in the Jewish camp, as it was covered with a cloud, the Anani HaKavod, because the Shekhinah was there. Hashem had said to Moshe a while ago that Hashem would speak with him in the Mishkan, but Moshe didn't want to be presumptuous to decide to enter the Mishkan on his own because of his abundance of humility, and he wasn't going to do it even if meant he would have had an advantage over everyone else by davening or getting nevuah or bringing karbanos before anyone else. It would be a great opportunity. He didn't want to push it. So that's why the Sefer in our Parsha begins with the words Vayikra. Hashem called Moshe so that he would enter the Mishkan so that Hashem could speak to him. The Tzener Rena continues that Rav Isler writes that the Aleph at the end of the first word in the Parsha, which is Vayikra, Vav Yod Kuf Resh Aleph, which means he called, is written with a small Aleph. It's as if Moshe wrote the word Vayikar instead. The word Vayikar is translated differently by the different commentaries to explain the lesson that can be learned from the small Aleph. Rav Israel writes that the word Vayikar comes from the root kar, cold, from the language of coolness. That is, Moshe's mind cooled because when Aaron was anointed as the Kohen Gadol, Moshe was upset. The Tzener Rena says that Moshe was upset that Hashem didn't appoint him to be a Kohen. But we had said that Moshe Rabbeinu was humble, so this seems contradictory. But we will understand in a second why Moshe was upset. So Hashem spoke to him with the word Vayikra. The root of Vayikra, the Shoresh, is Kuf Resh Aleph, which is how the Malachim, the angels, speak to each other. We say in davening that the Malachim are Karazeh El Zeh Ve'amar. They call to one another. So when Hashem spoke to Moshe using this language of Vayikra, and he called, it was a soft and pleasant tone, and it was the language which the Malachim speak. And so Moshe cooled off and said to himself, even though I didn't merit to be a Kohen here in the Mishkan and to serve Hashem, I will merit to serve Hashem in the Beis HaMikdash in heaven like a Malach, because Hashem spoke to me in the language of Malachim. This explanation focuses on how even Moshe, who was an Anav, was nervous about his relationship with Hashem. He thought that not serving as a Kohen meant he could not serve Hashem fully. When he heard Hashem call him like a Malach, he took comfort that although he can never do the role of a Kohen, in his role as Moshe Rabbeinu, he could reach the level of Malachim and could serve Hashem as Hashem wanted. And in that, there is a lesson. We can all be called by Hashem. We are all going to be called by Hashem like the Malachim. We each have a role where we can serve Hashem in the next world, even if we don't have the status of others in this world. There is another explanation for why the Aleph is small. Hashem appears to Nevi'im, to prophets, in different ways. Bilam was an evil Navi for the non-Jews at the time of Moshe. When Hashem spoke to him, it uses the word Vayikar, which means that Hashem happened to speak with him. The Baal HaTurim writes that Hashem commanded Moshe to write in the Torah Vayikra in full with an Aleph, using the word that refers to how Malachim speak. And Moshe thought to himself, how can I go ahead and write in the Torah Vayikra as if this was an appointment that Hashem is calling me? If I write it with an Aleph, Bnei Yisrael are going to say that I'm a Baal Gaiva, I'm totally arrogant, because I write about myself with such an important and beautiful language of the Malachim. But if I don't write with an Aleph, and I only write the word without an Aleph, I'll break Hashem's commandments. And Hashem commanded me to write Vayikra and not Vayikar. So what am I supposed to do? So Moshe had a creative solution. He wrote the word Vayikra with a small aleph, so it would be seen to be as if it was written without an aleph. And so he wouldn't transgress the commandment of Hashem, because sof kol sof, in the end, he wrote Vayikra. But he also wouldn't be pushing himself in front of his people. Continuing in the Tzenerena to the next part of the Pasuk says, Ne'ohel Moed, the sound of the voice of Hashem was in the Mishkan, inside the tent. And the voice was not heard outside of the Mishkan, even though the voice of Hashem was very loud. This idea is used by the Tzenerena to further clarify the degree to which Hashem can influence and control what a person can and cannot perceive with his senses. Based on the fact that only those in the Mishkan can hear Hashem's voice, we can learn that Hashem has the power to make any person who is standing right next to a sound not be able to hear, and can make any person who's far away be able to hear. Nothing is too difficult for Hashem to do. The Tzenerena tells us that this happens in the book of Shmuel. Shmuel was a young boy who lived with Eli HaKohen, and Hashem calls to Shmuel in the middle of the night, Shmuel, Shmuel, and Shmuel thought that Eli was calling him. And so Shmuel comes to Eli and asks, what do you want? And Eli said, I didn't call you. So Shmuel went to bed. And as he lay down, again, a voice came to him and called, Shmuel. And again, Shmuel went to Eli and asked, what do you want? And Eli said to him, I didn't call you. Go lay down and sleep. The first time, Eli thought it might have been a mistake, because maybe Shmuel had a dream. And sometimes dreams still seem so real that we hear things. But when Shmuel came the second time, Eli realized that this is not just a sound. This was a nevuah, a vision, which was meant to tell Shmuel something. And so Eli said to Shmuel, you go and rest and lie down. Eli himself got up from his bed in the dark and wanted to hear who is the one who is able to call Shmuel in the middle of the night. And he thought to himself, if I can hear who is calling him, that means it's a human voice. And if I can't, then that's a sign that it is Hashem's voice. When Shmuel came the third time to Eli and said to him that he called him again, then Eli knew the voice was the voice of Hashem, as Hashem is able to make one person hear and then another person not hear, even though they're right next to each other. Hashem can always also make this happen with sight, with what we see. Hashem can make two people stand next to each other. One will be able to see a malach, and the second won't be worthy to see a malach, like which happened with Daniel, who saw angels and wonders, and the people who are next to him saw nothing. So what's the lesson here for us? Sometimes we can't understand the heightened sensitivities of those tzaddikim and tzidkaniyot who are living in our midst. They may look at something and cringe and say it lacks kedusha, or they might look at a person and see the holiness in him. When we look at either of these things, it all seems kind of neutral. We start to question the other person. What we can learn from this parsha is that there are individuals who Hashem chooses, based on their holiness, to reveal more to. So a tzaddik can perceive kedusha or lack of kedusha in this world, and we don't even have the antenna to know what to look for. My husband told me a story that happened to a friend of his. The friend was in Israel, and his family picked him up from a sports game and told him, we're going to see the stipler gone. So he threw on a coat, and when he got there, the stipler told him he should be wearing tzitzis. How did the stipler know? He knew because a tzaddik sees beyond what we do. The converse is also true. If we see something and someone else doesn't notice it, it doesn't mean that there's anything wrong with the other person. It means that Hashem has given us the privilege of seeing something that wasn't given to our friends. The Tzenerena continues to a new topic. Parshas Vayikra begins with the laws of karbanos, and it begins with a phrase, Adam ki akriv, when a person brings a karban. The word used to describe a person is Adam, rather than the word ish, which are synonymous, they both mean man. Rashi writes that the reason that the word Adam is used, and not ish, man, is to show us that just as Adam HaRishon did not bring karbanos from that which was stolen, since he was the only one in the world, which meant everything on the planet belonged to him, we must also act this way, as when we're bringing a karban to Hashem, we need to be careful that we don't use any stolen goods for our karban. This idea was emphasized in Parshas Pekudei and is being repeated here. Any mitzvahs we do must come from our own property, since Hashem hates any mitzvahs done with things that were gained through theft or corruption. The Pasuk then tells us that karbanos should be brought min habehema, from the animal. Hashem commanded us to bring karbanos from the silent animals. We're not allowed to bring from predators which kill people and other animals, and they can't be venomous or carnivores. Why? Doesn't Hashem like self-sufficiency? Doesn't Hashem want animals with confidence? No, says the Tzenerena. Hashem loves those who are prey rather than those who are predators. Those who are chaste are not arrogant or proud. Hashem hates those who pursues others and kills. And so Hashem commanded that we offer karbanos from the quietest animals, from the quietest births, from sheep, goats, and cows. This is an important lesson for us. We look at those with swagger and who intimidate others with a mix of fear and appreciation. Don't we wish we could be confident and get what we want? No, says Hashem. That's not what we should be aiming for. We want to work on ourselves and get rid of anger and corruption and arrogance. Humility can only exist in people who are willing to be insulted and not respond, instead of being aggressive and attacking. The first carbon discussed is a carbon ola, which is brought for improper thoughts. This is the first carbon because all the other sins have this sin at its source. This is why the carbon ola, the halacha is that when a rich person sins, he brings a much larger animal than when an average person sins or when a poor person sins. When a rich person sins, he brings a bull for a carbon. Because a rich person will have an attitude and consider himself important, and he might be somewhat arrogant, and so his improper thoughts will lead him to sin more than an average person who won't have so many arrogant thoughts. For this reason, the average person brings a sheep, which is a lot less expensive than a cow. The poor person, in contrast, knows his place. He's been beaten down by others. And so all he needs to do to atone for his thoughts is to bring a bird as a carbon, which is very inexpensive. The carbon can be shechted or slaughtered by a Levi or a Yisrael, and not just by a Kohen. But the Kohen is the one who has to put wood on the Mizbeach. The Gemara in Yuma says that Nadav Navi who died because of this, because they ruled Halacha before Moshe Rabbeinu, because they said the fire came down from heaven to eat the carbonos, and the fire can be from a lay person. And the law is, one who has a halachic teacher, a Rebbe, and he paskins a halacha, and he decides a matter of halacha in the presence of this Rebbe, is deserving of death. So that's why he dies. Rav Saadia writes that Nadav and Avihu did not understand what Moshe Rabbeinu said very well, and so they made a mistake as a result. The Tanna teaches us an important lesson here. A person must listen to his Rebbe very carefully and try to understand him very well, because otherwise there are severe consequences. If Nadav and Avihu had listened to Moshe, the teacher, well, or even if when they didn't understand something, they asked him a question so they could know how to do the right thing and what needed to be done, they would not have died. They only died because they didn't listen well or they didn't ask what exactly was the avera that they would do if they sinned. This behavior in not asking for assistance is in sharp contrast to Moshe Rabbeinu and to Eliezer Shmuel, as we mentioned before. Moshe was the ultimate anav. He would not make assumptions as to what he knew and didn't know. Eli, the senior rabbi, was willing to acknowledge that his young protege could hear nevuah that he couldn't hear. And Shmuel went 3 times to ask from his Rebbe when it was clear his Rebbe thought he was hearing things. In contrast, Nadav and Avihu didn't act with this type of anava and didn't submit themselves to Moshe Rabbeinu, and the consequences were horrific. Rabbeinu Bachaye writes an explanation as to why Hashem wants us to bring karbanos. He says that a person without a virus is like a malach. If a person does an Avera, Hashem gave us an out. We would need, in the time of the Beis Hamikdash, the Mishkan, we would need to bring a karban, and then we will get atonement, a kapara, and we will return to being like a malach. Therefore, the person that's bringing the karban has to say vidoy over the karban, because he's bringing it for all his sins that he did with his body and his soul. When a person brings a karban, he first puts his hands on the karban to indicate that he's putting his sins, he's confessing his sins with that he did with his hands. And they throw the blood on the Mizbeach, they sprinkle the blood to atone for the blood in the human body, because really, when a person sins, they've disconnected them from themselves from Hashem, and a person should die, they should be slaughtered because of the averus that they committed. A person must think that really he is liable for the 4 death sentences of Beis Din, Skila, Srefa, Harag, Vechenek. And because of this, the carbon atones. So as soon as the animal is taken to slaughter, it's similar to stoning. Because had a man had to be stoned, they're liable for skila, and so they're thrown from a tall tower. And after this, everyone throws stones on him. And therefore, the person should stand next to his carbon and see how they throw the carbon to the ground, just like they would throw a person from a high place, and the sinner will think, this is what they should do to me. When they want to slaughter the carbon, they have to hold it strongly by its neck, as if it's being strangled. This shows that a person, if they did the wrong thing, needs to be strangled, the chenek. When we would shech the karban, it would be like the punishment of hereg, killing, because one is killed by a swordsman. And when we burn the animal's organs on the mizbeach, it is like srefa, burning. With all these things, a person, when bringing a karban, should think to himself that he himself deserves these 4 kinds of deaths, and he regrets his averus, his sins. This is the essence of what a karban is. The lesson is that a person needs to reflect on what he did because it may have been caused by arrogance. Arrogance is the root of so much sin. A person needs to reach out beyond his arrogance and figure out, what have I done to deserve this punishment? When bringing a carbon, there's a lot of visceral imagery, and that helps reach through the person's defenses to help them come to do tshuva. There are so many more lessons that can be learned from Parshas Vayikra, including the fact that when we bring a bird, we take out their stomach and we spread them out over the Mizbeach. Why do we take out their stomach? And the reason is because this animal could be going from property to property and eating things that are not theirs. And Hashem truly hates theft. And so Hashem does not want any theft brought on his Mizbeach. Hashem makes sure to have a carbon that will not have any theft to teach us this very important lesson. So when we come to Parshas Vayikra, after we've learned all these lessons, we realize that what we thought at the beginning of the parasha didn't come to fruition. We thought, what can I learn? We don't bring carbonos anymore. It's a different time. How can I relate? The answer is that this parasha is very relevant. We need to watch ourselves and consider, are we keeping in mind Hashem is in charge and that I follow him like Moshe? Or am I so confident in myself that I don't notice when I'm wrong and I think wrong thoughts and can sin without my realizing I am stumbling? Also, we once again learn how wrong it is to steal, which is a theme that is repeated from last week. This parsha encourages us to look at ourselves and refine our attitudes as well as our actions to ensure they are in line with what Hashem wants. Have a good Shabbos.